You're listening to Out There Atlanta, a podcast featuring interviews with artists in Atlanta and beyond, conducted in the spirit of a casual conversation. Out There Atlanta is sponsored by burnaway.org, an online destination for dialogue about the arts. Music for this podcast was provided by MSIF. For this week's podcast, I spoke with Kristen Morris and Karen Touches, the founders of the Sunday Art Salon. The Sunday Art Salon is a monthly curatorial project conducted at Karen's home in Cabbage Town. The Sunday Art Salon features art installations, conversations, dialogue, and texts surrounding that month's theme. Here are Karen and Kristen.
So I'm Karen Touches, and I'm an artist and designer here in Atlanta.
I'm Kristen Juarez. I am a writer and soon-to-be academic here in Atlanta.
Great. And you guys have started something called the Sunday Art Salon. Today is April 1st. No April Fools here, though. And it is in its... It just had its third incarnation yesterday, right? And what you guys do is a really interesting thing. You've sort of appropriated Karen's home, or she has volunteered her home. It opened up this fabulous shotgun-style house in Cabbage Town. You guys fill it with interesting artwork and have conversations, and truly a salon. So I would love to hear from you guys, you know, what led you to doing this, because this is a completely free, just your time venture, not any profit generating. I would love to hear what led you to thinking that there was a need for this in Atlanta, because obviously there has been. The turnout has been great. And also, what decisions have led it to being this model and why that works.
Well, okay, to start off with, as you well know, we were in discussions last summer about starting a curatorial collective, and we had gone down to New Orleans with Guion and met with the Front. And they have a model where they share rent on a relatively affordable space, and there are 12 members, and each member gets a month. And we were really impressed with them and their model, and we had lunch in the back, and they were totally cool. But personally, and I know we agree on this, there's no way in hell I want to have a group of 12 curators and share rent and deal with that kind of bureaucracy. Like, no thank you. And so we were trying to figure out, with a small group of people, like we were thinking five or four, how cheap a place could we get and be able to practice with that and have it be sustainable financially and time-wise. Because, you know, I was on the board of IBM for 5 or 6 years, and the organizational task for such a big thing was just overwhelming. And we were artists, and we wanted to have programming and do things, not do paperwork and go to board meetings. So we knew we wanted something like that. And you remember at the end of the summer, a space came available that was in the right price range, and it was the right size and location on DeKalb Avenue. And it got serious real quick, and some people dropped out, and we got a core of like 4 or 5 people, and then it didn't happen. And Kristen and I, we thought, well, if we're not going to do the curatorial collective, maybe we'll work on a curation. And we worked on this curation.
In the meantime, though, there were a number of conversations that we've had, like, here and there about getting groups of people to talk about ideas that we were interested in surrounding contemporary art and ideas as they are expressed through contemporary art. That would come up, and we would get really pumped about it, and, you know, we'd go on with our schedules, and then... The final push, I think, was we applied for a grant to do a really formal exhibition.
Called No Man's Land.
Called No Man's Land.
It was all about land art, which we're both really very interested in from different points of view.
And we didn't get it. and you know, we called each other, like, right before the new year, and we said, we still got to do something. Like, that was enough of a taste to realize that it's more than just wanting to do something cool, that it was like a drive, a need, for me at least, like it was my way of practice. So we decided, we put it the last Sunday of the month, we marked it on our calendars, and we were gonna put together
Well, okay, so let's just say this. I've used my house quite a lot as a gallery. It's just always a fallback. I mean, it's practically on the street. I mean, and you couldn't ask for a better location right in Cabbage Town. I mean, it's a very, like, commercially people-friendly sort of place. And I think the house likes it. You know, from the minute I ever walked in here, the house just loves to have a party.
Throws it at a party.
It really does. So, you know, I always had that in the back of my mind. And then I don't really remember what the catalyst was, but we were just like, light bulb on. Why don't we just use this space? Done. Yeah. And it was also a good motivation for me because I have to make sure my house is clean again at the end of every Sunday, which was a good motivator, you know, and to clear things out and to kind of keep it in a way that is always kind of half gallery that I live in.
So I think one of the main, like one of the underlying points of all of these investigations is somehow loosely tying it back to land. And the first one was dark matter, second one was light and land, and this last one was sacred objects. And that has been, for me, a really important way just to have a reason to dive into the internet and see what's going on in the world and seeing what artists are making, because I am very interested in video. And so it's a really great excuse to carve out several hours in a week.
Yeah, so like our practice, like we're learning. Like my practice, my investigation, like I have to go to Emory, to the library, to look things up. I have to go online and search and, you know, bookmark sites, and because we have this thing coming up, mm-hmm. and, you know, it helps me in my art making process and realize which things I'm interested in, and then to get feedback. I mean, you know, that's one of the things I think people complain about a lot in Atlanta, is it's so spread out. An art opening isn't always the place for deep conversation.
It's rarely the place.
It's rarely the place. I was trying to be diplomatic. but you know, and that's one of the reasons I'm in the arts. I mean, I'm not in it to be a rock star or to make a lot of money. I'm in it because I'm passionate about the subject. And I love art thinking. It is non-linear. It can be imaginative, it doesn't have to be logical, it's an alternative to academic thinking and writing. We use images, we use associations, there's chance, there's personality, there's performance, there's light, there's all this stuff. And a salon is an opportunity to actually like exercise some of those good things that art brings up for people. It's not just as a rubber. I always love Lewis Kamenetzer. He wrote this essay, he read it at the Contemporary, and I'll never forget it because it's so profound. But he was critical of art simply being something to be bought and sold and traded. And he called art enormous rocks, right, that have to be carefully moved here and placed over here and all this. And I'm not against that, I'm all for it, but there are all the other layers of culture that come along with it that are subtle and sophisticated that need to be protected by art spaces, that with a salon you can start to do. And there's no pressure, we don't have to make a living doing this.
Right.
We just have to have enough for our wine and sell our little booklets.
And we've also, I think, the nice thing about it being so informal is that we don't feel bad about showing, like,
oh yeah,
you know, James Turrell. And
oh, I think that's hilarious, right? Though. But that's a privilege.
How do you show a James Turrell though? And
we showed the video.
We
that's
showed
available
this,
on YouTube.
Yeah, we showed a video on a guy who went to see Rodin Crater, and part of that was him going around to different sites, private ones included, and looking at his skyscapes and looking at the different ways that he has been slowly like working towards this giant volcano. And it's such a ridiculous thing, like the crater, you know, as a as an exercise and artwork, that it triggers so many other conversations, and you can have that.
Yeah,
here.
And he's an icon. I mean, you wouldn't ever get to have him in a commercial gallery or a small show at all, but here we can bring him into the conversation, and he's fair game.
Right.
And we can invite also a local artist that works with light and compare the two. I mean, we do that anyway in our conversations.
And I think where that comes from is that there are people who are, we appreciate the seriousness of their depth of thought and the way that they're articulating them visually. And that does not have to strictly apply to a local or global or whatever, however parameters you want to put around it, so that...
Yeah, I mean, we're being kind of funny with it, but it is a statement, political statement.
Is it ever surprising for the local artists involved to find themselves in conversations with someone like James Turrell?
I'm sure that they love it to be in a booklet that we produced with James Turrell. I'm sure it's an honor.
So, in the past 3 months, the project has obviously evolved into something bigger, but it also feels sort of stronger, like you guys have worked out some kinks and have a clearer idea of where you want this to go.
I mean, hopefully we're letting it speak to us. All three so far have been really different, and I'm learning what things I liked and which things I don't like, and what I'm able to continue to do on a regular basis. Because, you know, we all have our own projects, and we have to make a living, too. But I've definitely learned, and I do think having a moment not too long in the middle of the three-hour period where we actually stop the party and talk in a group. Yesterday's conversation, I thought, was fantastic. We gathered in the middle room, and we really had a discussion.
And you arranged speakers for this ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm almost thinking that in the future we'll only do one or two. Like, I want to keep it brief because you don't want to get stuck. You want to spark something and share, and then people will talk some more about it after. Mm-hmm. So it's a three-hour salon. The first hour's just fun.
Get your drinks,
socialize. And then the second hour is talk. And then the third hour, and however long it takes for everyone to leave, mm-hmm. is just the conversation that happens after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is the longest it's taken someone to leave so far?
It's not too bad. I think...
The first one went pretty long.
The first one was late. The first one was a party. And I don't know what happened. We didn't have a discussion, not formally.
But we learned that.
Yeah, and then we learned. And then the next time, we gathered here in the front room. And I liked that. I mean, I suppose it's going to be different every time. Like, next time, we're going to have an experiment with houseplants. So I imagine it's not going to be a real, like, discussion. It's going to be an experiment. We're going to do something together.
Oh, that's right. People are invited to bring their own houseplant?
Yes.
Can you give any sort of teaser as to...
Well, our friend Steven Anderson, who's new in town from L.A., has a real... He believes in the spiritual nature of plants. And we were... hang out with him, and we mentioned the book The Secret Life of Plants by this man who had been an encephalogram specialist in New York City. An encephalogram is a lie detector. And it was the 70s. And I don't know, he was goofing around one afternoon, and he decided to put the encephalogram on his houseplants, and he started to make these discoveries. And I don't think you had ever read the book. And this was one of those books for me that, like, changed my life. So
Stephen's like, oh, I have it. And he hands it to me. And we're chatting. And it was like, well, that's it. So,
yeah.
You know, I think one of the things that I really get out of it is that we have, for basically each one kind of found a text we were inspired by or rooted out from, and then, like, every idea there are 1,000 articulations of it, and our practice being you know, a great chunk of that. So I'm sure the things that we show will, they'll tie directly or indirectly back to this idea or this root of that, you know, they're, I think actually all of them tie back to, like, there are things we don't understand and how are ways that we chip away at coming to terms with that, and visual practice.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I mean, that's what I think is so brilliant about being in the arts as opposed to some other realm. With art thinking, you don't have to nail it down. It's going to float this way and float that way, and we kind of gesture toward the feeling of this truth, and then it shifts and it's no longer accurate, and we can get away with that. You can't do that in journalism. You can't do that in science. You know, you can't even really do that in your own life, but you can do it in art, you know? And so I feel like we're really practicing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our booklet's wildly eclectic.
And that is, like, one of the things that I appreciate is, like, our compilation of... It's visual culture, but it's also fine art, as you want to... However you want to term that, but we are looking at things as they exist in the world around us, and then very specifically as people are deliberately making things because of
we have a fine art point of view. I mean, it gets confusing because fine art now is living so close a parallel life to regular visual culture, which is everywhere. I mean, we are, our lives are filled with visuality, but fine art is something much smaller groups of people, and it comes from a very specific place. Like, there are only a handful of art centers in all the world that really practice fine art, and then there's the accessibility that is financially determined.
But I think it's important to make the distinction that when we say fine art, we don't mean it to be alienating or hierarchical, but...
No, but it is a tradition. It's a tradition of practice that's been very well defined in the 20th century. And we're clear that that is what we are aspiring to be a part of, and we are a part of.
It's interesting that you guys begin with a text with every theme, but don't really project that or don't advertise that beforehand, so that there's not even really any question of anyone feeling like they had to go to the library and check it out and read it to fully participate and engage with what's going on. And it's interesting to me because it's sort of, you know, it's not in the place of a reading group.
Mm-hmm.
And there have not been many successful, I think, long-term art reading groups in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting, as a reading group can be a very sort of politically charged and active thing. And I've heard that the High Museum used to have a contemporary art reading group that was tied to some sort of modern's membership thing, whatever the High called it, and that sort of dissipated in the last 10 years.
I mean, that sounds like I would love to do that too, or I'd like to be part of something like that. I mean, I thought about, I don't know, I don't know if we ever discussed it, you know, posting something on the website, like one article for everyone if they want to have read it, to come having read, but we kind of chose not to, to keep it lighter. But it does limit the, you know, I thought maybe people will come in the afternoon and have the time, it would be chill enough to actually sit down and read a few things that we've selected, but that really wasn't happening. So, fair enough. But people do enjoy the booklets, and they take them home, and I think they read them posthumously and digest it after just a, like, it's just a light, you know, highlight of what the subject might mean.
Yeah.
And the subject titles, I think, kind of give people a clue to maybe they're thinking about it before they came. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's something important to how it's gone so far, though, that it is so casual and open for the viewer to come? Like, someone can, no one feels any obligation to prepare, no one has to think or do anything, you can just sort of roll in at any time between 3 and 6
so.
On a Sunday.
Well, you can't do it any other way. I mean,
it would be asking a lot of people, and if we want to continue doing it. And then also, we don't want to intimidate anyone. Like, hey, show up. Here's the idea. Why don't you think on your feet, you know?
And everybody has an opinion. Like, I don't think you need to be able to cite a source in order to have a valid opinion on,
definitely,
like, a life experience and how you react to an idea or an image or moving image.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of what we've always needed it to be was easy. And that applies to people who are coming also, you know?
I mean, don't you think, I consider practicing art here in Atlanta as being a suburb or an outpost of maybe living in an art center where this sort of thing is maybe more dense in our everyday life. And I think high art or fine art gallery spaces that are bright and formal and there are important people that are there tend to shut down real... I think that casual and friendly is a very good approach to fine art in this place, in particular. I mean, it's good anywhere, but I think it works particularly well here
yeah.
in Atlanta.
Well, you guys are doing this at a time in which there is certainly a lull in the alternative spaces existing. iDrome has not had much of a physical presence in the last couple of years. Dashboard does pop-up shows, but it's not really as consistent as, say, like a gallery that you could go to all the time. But at the same time, the commercial galleries are faltering as well, and I think that at the ones, and this is my own opinion, but at the ones that are still left, where overall there's not a ton of actual curation happening. Some of them are still maintaining a sort of truer curatorial practice, but I think there is some fear and some moves towards the commercial that are happening. So it's interesting to me that the Sunday Art Salon has arisen in this sort of, you know, unstable time in Atlanta arts. And I'd love to hear from you guys, you know, if you think that speaks true to your experience of it, if you think it does fill that place, or, you
well,
know, general
if there
thoughts.
Are certain expectations, I mean, I have this myself, you know, you if you're going to go through the trouble of curating a show, which is a lot of work, and it's a work of love, you want it to be in a place that's going to get the respect it deserves, and you want to be able to ask important artists to come and show there, you know, I mean, so doing a show in your home, there are obstacles for doing that, right? And that's why you would want to have a formal gallery and to be able to sell and to do all those things. So, but what happens is that the curatorial practice becomes the last thing that you do. The first thing you do is make sure you can make rent and that you're selling the art and the artists are happy because they're selling things. And so then the curation only happens in big museums. But curation can happen on the smallest level. Like retail stores and small indie shops, they curate, you know, and so... why not do a really careful job in an inexpensive or free space? But then you have to put parameters around it to make sure people understand it is special, right? I mean, because we've lost our white spaces, but I don't know that we were really doing a lot of curation in our commercial white spaces to begin with. We were more just showing product. Or if the curation happened, it was the artist compiling a show that goes together to make a point. It fell to the artist. There wasn't that extra employee, the curator, to put it together. So, I mean, you know, doing an informal show has the potential to create a new form of curation. But as long as people understand that it is casual and informal.
And for me, I mean, I'm, what, now like 3 years into being in Atlanta. I don't have... maybe some of the same baggage that people have when they think about what is possible here. And for me, I have found similar to when I realized that I needed to write. It's something that I like physically had to do in order to... that's how I express myself. I'm not an artist, I don't make objects, but I needed to write about what I was thinking and using art as a way to work through those ideas. And it has fallen into the same category for me with curation. It is in part my training, but because you can't go to a formal space and say, I want to put up a show. I mean, the budget alone is enough to hinder any kind of really experimentation. So that's kind of the charm of, you know, finding things as we can find them in whatever capacity we can.
And we have a limited time.
Right.
Which is, makes it really interesting. I mean, I really is like a practice exercise.
Exactly.
And you know you get better when we practice on a regular basis. You know? Like, how else are you going to get better at curating? Oh, do a show once a year? Once every 3 years?
Right. And the turnaround of a formal space. Like, yeah. Nothing here is too permanent. It can't be, you know? And nor can it be too precious.
Right. Yeah, it can't be too precious either.
And
most of it is immaterial.
Right. So, you know, being able to show video in your lofted bedroom space and have people chill out upstairs, that was like a really important part. Like, if somebody's going to sit down to watch a video, they need to be comfortable. Like, there needs to be, like, a love seat, and maybe a beanbag eventually.
I'm looking at beanbags.
And that actually is part of my, like, bigger goal, is to start to get more people ready to sit and watch something from beginning to end, and having opportunities to get comfortable doing that, as opposed to like stepping into something, watching it for as long as you think you've like put in your viewing time, and walking away and not really taking the arc.
I mean, I think displaying video work is something that we're all trying to figure out, because video art is gonna be growing more and more and more. And it's, again, something that is parallel to our visual culture, but an entirely different genre. And I mean, it's a lot like performance art as opposed to theater. And so how do you show it? Because there's sound, you need space and time to see it. Some need to be big, some need to be small. Do you buy it? Is it in an edition? Do you only watch it on an app? You know, and so again, this is one of the things we can play with, because we have no overhead. We don't have to sell it.
Right.
There's tons of stuff available online already.
And part of it, I think, the special thing about being in a home and an environment is that you start to see, like, oh, this is something that I could actually have in my home, playing at a dinner party, playing as background. Some things are more audible, there's more aural component. So then when you see it in a home or domestic environment, that
you see how you live with it.
Yeah, you can live with it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I hadn't really thought about video art as something to be lived with. I mean, I rarely think of art as something to be lived with, because I'm not a collector per se. I buy art and have bought art, but I don't think about it in that sort of way. It's interesting to pull video into that, but it's absolutely right, because otherwise video is just for museums,
right?
And that narrows the field, narrows the conversation.
And it's
in so
a really
ways.
Funny thing, like, why don't we, as just citizens, not just art people, why don't we play with video more? Like, we all have flat screen TVs and tons of screens, computers and iPads and you know, even our desktop, like, snapshots are on slideshows. You know, why don't we take clips of things we find on Vimeo and YouTube and just have it repeating because we love it in the background? You know? I mean, we're artists. I mean, sometimes I do leave Tarkovsky playing on my screen just without the sound, you know, just because it looks great while I'm doing something else. But that's not the norm. But it could easily be. It's just a practice that people might have not thought of doing.
And you probably already have the capacity to
you
watch.
You probably already can do it.
Yeah, so how are you guys sifting through the wealth of stuff that is on the internet?
It's somewhat random.
It's very random.
I have like left it to the like. I feel like we tapped into like every time we choose a subject. Like I start to see things everywhere.
Yeah.
That you know, efflux, man. You'll get like 20 emails a day, and following that those like trail of crumbs, you can end up in some interesting places, and then it's the selection process, and that's part of the curatorial
process.
We
throw it all into the cauldron. Like, you know, she's during the course of the month, and we know ahead of time, like, we had one master meeting, and we set, like, 3 or 4 ahead, and we had no idea what would go in it, but this is the subject. And then, during the course of that month, we'll meet once a week, and it's fun, it's casual, we have a tea, we catch up on personal stuff, and then we're like, what's up with the salon? And then she'll start throwing me things and I stick it in my folder, and I'm collecting things, and then, you know, about that week before the salon, I start designing the booklet, and it kind of helps everything to come together. And a lot of things don't make it.
And I think that sometimes, like, where the text component mm-hmm. comes in, where like either it's visually striking hands down, like alone, but most often it starts to come back to the conversation we had or that text that we started from.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to focus back on, okay, what is this one about?
Right.
Okay. And then also synchronicity, you know, someone shows up and we never met them before, and they have to make art about coal mines, and we're doing a show about dark matter. Like, oh, okay. If they had showed up 2 months after, then it wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
So there's that. So it is also just a documentation of our thinking process for that month.
How's it been being two minds thinking about the same topic?
We just jam it together.
Well, that is, I think, it's so hard to do something well by yourself, continuously. To have someone, like, there's been times where I'm just like, I can't make it, let's talk on the phone, and Karen's like, you know what, I've been looking at this, this, and this, and it's like, that's the energy that I needed to, like, get back onto the horse.
Well, and it makes it fun too.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We're friends, and it's just like hanging out, but we're making art.
It was just, it's part of the reason why we're friends.
Yeah. So, it works.
Yeah. So 3 months in, what are you guys thinking for the near future or far future?
Well, we have 2 more to do, and then we're gonna break for the summer.
So the last one will be in May.
Yeah.
Do you know the theme for that one?
Cities of refuge.
Utopian architecture.
Dystopian.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be so much... That's going to be really different.
Yeah.
But I think actually really in line with a lot of... I think that'll be an amazing thing to round out with because it's something we think about outside of...
Well, we started... And we started really... earth and materials and then spirituality and plants, and we're going to end with the most structural
man-made
thing. But so then we'll pick back up in the fall, and we're trying to decide, but most likely it won't be every last Sunday of the month, but it'll be every other, which I think will prove to be something we can continue to do for quite a bit of time.
And it'll probably look a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
offer a little bit more content
mm-hmm.
Beyond the physical day.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, our website is humble and just a place for information regarding the next salon. And so maybe as we
grow... I mean, it could be we could really have an installation that... is here that people could come see during the course of the 2 month period, or I mean, I don't know, we'll see how that changes things.
Always experimenting.
Yeah.
Well, if people would like to know more about the Sunday Art Salon, what is this website that they should go to?
It's a blog, and it is sundayartsalon.blogspot.com.
I can't believe it wasn't taken already.
I know. No. And neither is our email, which is sundayartsalon@gmail.com.
Well, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Again, if you'd like to find out more about the Sunday Art Salon, head to sundayartsalon.blogspot.com. As always, check out burnaway.org for events, reviews, and articles about art. And check out our website, outthereartlanta.com, for photos and updates. Thanks for listening.